And we're holding on Ayin Aleph, Amud Beis, second line from the bottom. We've been talking about Bris Milah, and last thing we said was that we know that Milah has two components. There's Milah and there's Priya. There's also, by the way, Mitzitza, but that the Gemara is not dealing with over here. It does mention it in Shabbos, though. Anyway, as far as the removal of the Orla and everything that's there, we know there are two stages. There's Milah, there's cutting through the actual skin and removing it, and there's Priya, which is tearing open and removing the membrane that covers the end of the Aver over there. So what we said was that part of the mitzvah Priya was not given to Avraham Avinu. The first time that they were actually commanded to do it was when they came into Eretz Yisrael and Yeshua did a mass bris milah for everybody. So then at that point we learned from the Psukim that they did Priya. We said that Tosfos had said that it's not like they didn't do Priya before that. Or at least Avraham did, because he kept the whole Torah before it was given, but that particular aspect of the mitzvah had not yet been given to him, unlike Milah itself. So now, that obviously means that, the Pasuk is telling us then that the Jews who were born in the desert did not have a bris milah. So, over Midbar, my time alay mohel. So why indeed, during the 40 years in the Midbar, did they not do bris milah? We know that everybody had one before they left Mitzrayim. In fact, we learned Udiyu in the Masechta. How do we know that a ger has to have Mila and Tvila? Because we said the Jewish people underwent Mila before they left Mitzrayim, and that Tvila they did before Matan Torah. So, but the Pasuk is saying that all the Jewish boys who were born in the Midbar did not have a bris. Why not? Actually, Tosfos brings from Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer that seems to imply that they did. So therefore, Tosfos says maybe what it means is that we're saying that they did Mila and not Priya, apparently Tosfos understands that this that we said before, that Priya wasn't given to Avraham Avinu, but the implication would be that it was given at Matan Torah, so they should have been doing it during all the 40 years in the desert, but why not? But the Pashtus of the Gemara is we're talking about that they didn't mal at all. So why not? So Yiboy Seyma Mishum Chol Shadu Urcha, one possibility is because the weakness of the travel. They're constantly on the move. They're constantly traveling. We know that traveling with a baby who's just had a bris can be dangerous. Moshe Rabbeinu himself, we find in Parashas Shmos that he delayed the bris of one of his children because of that, because he's traveling to Mitzrayim. So that's one. That was one reason, because they never know when they're going to have to pack up and move. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is because the north wind didn't blow for them. The north wind, particularly we find in many places in Shas, is a gentle wind. Among other things, it clears the clouds away, so it makes for sunny days. But it also, it helps heal sick people. So therefore, it didn't blow for them during the 40 years in the Midbar, and therefore they didn't do Bris Milah. Tosfos points out, by the way, now we have a concept that the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that in the Midbar, they weren't just allowed to shecht animals wherever they wanted and eat them. If they want to eat meat, we actually have a machlokas, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva about this, but according to one opinion, the only way they could have meat was if they brought it as a korban. Now, an oral is not allowed to eat korbanos. So how did that work? So Tosfos gives a couple possibilities. One of them is, in fact, that you're right. Maybe only the ones who left Mitzrayim and had a full bris milah ate from those kodshim, but not the ones who were born in the desert. Another possibility, Tosfos says, is that, so how would that next generation eat meat? Well, if they couldn't bring it as korbanos precisely for that reason, then maybe they were allowed to eat it without shechting it. In any case, actually, there is another opinion.
That's why they had the mun, because they couldn't eat.
Well, that's why they had the mun, but they still had meat. For example, you have the slug had to be shechted and eaten. With that said, though, the Rambam learns like Rabbi Akiva and Paskins like Rabbi Akiva anyway, that in the Midbar, what it is if they wanted to shecht the animal, then they had to bring it as a korban, but they weren't required to do that. They could in the Midbar just kill the animal any old way and eat it, and then they wouldn't have to bring it as a korban at all. So in that case, then that answers the question very neatly. Then if they wanted to eat meat, all they would do is they would stab it or do something else rather than shechting it.
Wasn't that only until Matan Torah, after Matan Torah?
No, we're talking about the whole 40 years, until they came into Eretz Yisrael. The concept that you have to shecht, that the concept that you could never eat an animal without shechting it, came in only in Chumash Devarim, and it only came into effect once they came into Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, Tosfos says you don't really need that. All you need, even according to Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, all it is since they couldn't eat kodshim, then they're allowed to shecht animals and eat them in the same way as, for example, they'd be allowed to shecht a wild animal, since after all, you can't bring it as a korban. Anyway, so we're saying that, so one reason they didn't do the bris milah is because of the hardships of the journey, because they're always going to be on the move. And the other reason we're saying is because ruach tzfonis, the north wind, did not blow. The Tanya, as in fact, we learn in a braisa. Kol oisen aboim shana sho yisrael b'midbar, throughout those 40 years that they were in the desert, lo nashvalam ruach tzfonis, the north wind never blew for them. My timer, now why not? One possibility is because they were in a state of rebuke from Hashem. Rashi says it means ever since the Eidol. So therefore, so they didn't deserve like this. Then Ruach Tzfonis again would cause the Ruach Tzfonis would cause the clouds to scatter, and therefore for the sun to be able to for them to be able to enjoy the warmth of the sun. So ever since the Chet Eidol, Rashi says they weren't really deserving of that. Tosfos says it's actually not from the Chet HaEgel, but rather from the Chet HaMeraglim. I mean, after all, the HaEgel, Hashem did say Salachti Kedvarecha, and allowed them to put up the Mishkan, etc. So therefore, Tosfos learns that we're not talking about the full 40 years. We mean really 38 years plus from the Chet HaMeraglim. Anyway, that's one reason. Another reason would be in order that the Anani HaKovod themselves don't scatter. If the north wind scatters the clouds, then it would end up scattering the Anani HaKovod. So it didn't have that. In fact, an interesting explanation is that you have so in that case, why do you need two reasons? Is because, for example, Shevet Dun, it says, was mostly a large part of Shevet Dun was excluded from within the Anani HaKovod because they had a tendency towards Avodah Zarah, and they secretly had Pesel Micha with them or whatever. So for them, you can't use the reason of not scattering the Anani HaKovod. But for them, you have the other reason, because they were in a state of Nazifa, and therefore the north wind didn't blow for them. Tosfos says it doesn't mean it didn't blow at all. It means that it didn't blow by itself. There's a certain time of day when the north wind blows by itself and helps heal sick people. Here they didn't have that. So the Chassam Sofer has a fascinating tshuva at his last tshuva on Ur HaChaim. It's written to the Maharatz Chayus. It deals with all kinds of different things all over the place in the Torah. And one of them is the question, how is it that we're saying just because of the danger, they're not going to maul themselves? I mean, Moshe is going to just allow this to be like that? He's never going to call them on it. You know, you have to do a bris milah for your children. So the Chassam Sofer deals with that question. And he explains our Gemara to say that actually, what does it mean the Ruach Tzfonis didn't blow? So like this, normally, in other words, even if a person is in a sealed house, he says the Ruach Tzfonis will still benefit him because somehow it'll get in through gaps or cracks or whatever. Here, the point was the Anani HaKovod are completely hermetically sealed. However, for Shevet Levi, where the Rashi brings on the Pasuk in Parshas Vezos HaBracha, that the Levium were careful to continue mauling their children throughout the 40 years in the desert. So what would happen is for them, Hashem made it that somehow the north wind and the effect of it gets through the ceiling of the Anani HaKovod, and it's able to heal them. The rest of the Jewish people didn't take advantage of that, and therefore that nest didn't happen for them. In other words, the idea being, if they had, so it's their fault, in other words, for not taking advantage of that and being ready to do the Eibishter's mitzvah. And if they had, then in fact the Ruach Tzfonis would have benefited them as well, as it is, it was only for Shevet Levi. With that said, on the other hand, Sfono in the Pasuk in Vezos HaBracha says that in fact the Levium were taking a risk by doing that, by not having the Ruach Tzfonis. And it says, in fact, he says many of the Levium children, he says, passed away because of that. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara over here. So those are the various reasons why they didn't do Bris Milah in the desert.
To understand that Yidden, who had such miracles and they did what Hashem wanted, and Hashem has so many miracles going on in Mitzrayim, that this issue should be an issue if they went ahead and mauled.
The fact of the matter is, we do see that the rest of the Shvatim weren't always so loyal to Hashem. I mean, look at the number of times they provoked and tested Hashem in the Midbar. Shevet Levi always remained loyal, which is why Moshe praises them in his bracha and Vezeis HaBracha. So that's one point. Rashi mentions over there on the pasuk Shehem Hoyu Mulin, that they themselves had a Milo, Molo Espenehem, and they made sure to maul their children, but the rest of the Shvatim, not necessarily.
Right, but you're saying that their children died from the Levium?
So that's the Sfono on the pasuk in Vezeis HaBracha learns that way. Not everybody agrees with that, but that's what he says when Moshe is praising them for their Mesiras Nefesh, for the mitzvah, means that they were willing to take that risk. And even though they actually had children die from it because they don't have the Ruach Shlomis, nevertheless, they still continue to do it, he says.
So they went against Halacha, basically. You're not allowed to endanger
Halacha. No, that's the Chassam Sofer over there in his Shuvah is making the point that they were going according to Halacha and they were doing what they needed to do. And Hashem, now he learns not like the Sfona. He learns that, in fact, Hashem reciprocated for them and provided them the Ruach Shlomis. So maybe they didn't know whether it's going to happen or not, but they took the risk, and Hashem reciprocated and gave it to them.
Anyway, well, one second. We need to know the halacha. You seem to be saying that they
could. The halacha is that if the baby is sick and there's any reason to be afraid of danger to the baby's life, then you don't do the bris milah. But
that's the point. So why did they do it then?
There's another word. But here we're not talking about. So here we're talking about a side thing that there wasn't the ruach tzfonis. So even according to the Sfono, we could say that they were entitled to do bris milah. And if Hashem sends the ruach tzfonis, then good. And if not, then not. They'll take the risk. If it had been, for example, the baby is yellow, or the baby has a fever, or any of the other things that we talked about yesterday, of course, then al pi halacha, that's something else. Then you're not allowed to do the bris milah. Here we're talking about a side thing. Anyway, let's go on.
You're saying that they died without being yellow?
Without what? The children died,
and yes, without necessarily, you know, showing any sign of distress.
They knew this is a matter of Mesiras Nefesh. You know what? There's a medrash that actually says that when it's a bichlal, you have to think of it. Every milah carries a tiny degree of risk when you think about it. Even if you have ruach tzfonis, even if you have everything else, it's a non-zero amount of risk. And there's a medrash actually that says that when it says in the pasuk ki alecha haragnu kol hayom, that we say that we're ready to be killed for you. Actually, I think it's a gemara in Gittin says that when it says ki alecha haragnu kol hayom, that we're ready for every day to be killed for your sake, Hashem. It includes the fact that we do a bris milah, even though there's that non-zero risk. So in the case of Levium in the Midbar, according to the Sfona, we're saying it was a slightly higher risk because of the lack of Ruach Tzfonis, but not high enough to reach the point where we would say that therefore it's also to do it. Learn one second. Let's learn the next two lines of the Gemara, and then we'll see this will also bear on it. So Omer Papa, Hilkach Yoyma De'iva V'Yoyma De'Shusa, based on this, says Rapapa, if we're saying that the Ruach Tzfonis clears away the clouds, then that implies that on a cloudy day, there's no Ruach Tzfonis. So therefore, on Yom HaDi'iva, on a cloudy day, the Yom HaDi'shusa, or on a day when the south wind is blowing strongly, so obviously then at that point, there's no north wind, Loi Mahalinen Bay, then you shouldn't make a bris milah on such a day, because the point is, you're not going to have the Ruach Tzfonis, and therefore the risk to the baby is elevated. And by the way, Rapapa says another thing you shouldn't do on such days, you shouldn't do bloodletting for the same reason. You need to be healed afterwards from that. However, the Gemara says, however, nowadays people go and do that anyway. They make bris milas and they have bloodletting, whether the day is cloudy or not. So at that point, we say Hashem protect the simple. In other words, when you have something which is commonly done, And that carries only a low risk, then we say, go ahead and do what people normally do. And at that point, you can depend on Hashem to trust you. So I guess the Sfona would learn, returning to what we were saying, that was the situation in the desert. We're not saying the death rate from Mila was that high. Where we're talking about that instead of like this with a normal Mila, if there's Ruach Tzfonis, then let's say the chance is 1 in 1,000 maybe. And like this, because there was no Ruach Tzfonis, let's say maybe the risk goes up to 1 in 900. Not enough to justify stopping bris milah, and therefore they continue to do it. And again, according to the Chassam Sofer, it's not even that. We're saying that Hashem did reciprocate and gave them the ruach tzfonis, even though the rest of the Jewish people didn't have it. So in fact, actually, the Rishonim say based on this Gemara, that if you want to, that in fact, if you do want to delay, we are saying Shema Psalim Hashem, but nevertheless, if you do want to delay a bris milah because it's cloudy or whatever, then fine, go ahead. You have a basis on this Gemara to do that. On the other hand, the Maharshal says, come on, I mean, do you know, cloudy or not cloudy, you know, do you really, you know, you're going to start distinguishing how many clouds there are in the sky or whatever? So no, you just Shema Psalim Hashem, period. You do the bris milah, you take obviously the normal precautions, but to go so far, anyways, but to go so far as to delay a bris milah because it's cloudy and because you're worried about not having ruach tzvonis, that not. And in practice, you don't see people are not mizher about that. Again, this is an example of shem psoim Hashem. You do the normal things that people do, and you rely on Hashem, and you rely on Hashem for me. All right, let's go on. The Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan. Throughout the 40 years that the Jewish people were in the desert, there wasn't a, now even though we said they didn't have ruach tzfonis during the day, but there wasn't a single day when the ruach tzfonis did not blow in the middle of the night. As the pasuk says, that at midnight Hashem struck all the bechorim in Mitzrayim. And one says, what does one have to do with the other? My Talmudah. What does this point teach us? And the answer is Kamash Malon, the Ace Rotzen Milsin. It means that you should realize that Chatzos Halayla is an Ace Rotzen. It's a time of special favor from Hashem. And that's also what we're stressing, that Makas Bechoras happened then, meaning that even though it's normally a time when Hashem shows special favor, but there, Adrabah, Hashem turned it against the Mitzriim, and because Hashem is not bounded by his own middos, of course, and went and struck them and punished them, but it's an Ace Rotzen. And therefore, even during the time in the desert when they're Nizufim, then still the Ruach Tzfonis blew every night over there. In fact, Rashi says, based on the Gemara and Brachas, the famous thing that it did that in later times also, David HaMelech had his harp set up so that it would catch the north wind and start making a sound. Yeah, he had it set up so that when the north wind starts blowing, it would start strumming these strings, and then that would wake him up, start learning Torah. So we see, in other words, that Chatzos Laila is an Ace Rotzen. This is where we get the concept, for example, of Tikkun Chatzos. What's the idea? The idea is Chatzos, the time of Ace, is a time of special favor from Hashem, and therefore it's an appropriate time to be saying Tfilis, to ask Hashem to rebuild the Beis Mikdash and so forth. Okay. New topic, or continuing on a different topic regarding Bris Milah. Omer Avuna. Now, you have like this. A person can have a Bris Milah, and then conceivably it's possible afterwards that they can take the remaining skin on the Aver and stretch it out to sort of form a new Erla. Such a thing is called Moshuch. In Jewish history, you find occasionally, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, for example, that says that Ochan, the one who took from the spoils of Yericho, had done that. But in Jewish history, for example, you find there were various times when, now the Gemara is going to say, there were times during Shmodis, during persecutions of Jews, when Bris Milah was outlawed, and there were people who would do this in order to conceal their bris. But in earlier times also, books from the time of the Second Mikdash tell us, history books from the time of the Second Mikdash tell us, that since the Greeks didn't practice Bris Milah, of course, and they in fact looked down on anybody who did, so Jews who wanted to assimilate among the Goyim more, who wanted to act more like them, would do this kind of thing in order to make it look like they don't have a Milah.
So his parents did too. Maybe.
So we could talk about that his parents did it when he was a baby, or we could talk about that he himself does it when he's older. Anyway, such a thing is called in Halacha Moshuch. Now, you're not allowed to do it. And we're going to say in a few lines that the pasuk warns you against it, but nevertheless, it's still. So Omer Rav Huna, Dvar Torah Moshuch Oichel B'Truma. Rav Huna says, Minat Torah, a Moshuch would be allowed to eat Truma. We said since the beginning of the Perek that an Oral was not allowed to eat Truma, but a Moshuch is not an Oral. He had a Bris Milah. Now the skin has been stretched out and it covers, doesn't matter. Umidivrehim goes through all of only Midirabbanan did they make a Zera that he's not allowed to eat Truma, Mipnation Nira Ka'oro, because he looks like an Oro. The Gemara says, Mesri, I have a contradiction. Moshuch Tzorach Shayimo. A Braisa says that a Moshuch has to do another Bris Milah. And the answer is Midirabbanan. That means only Dirabbanan does he have to. But Midiraisa, he says he's fine. Which, by the way, there's a Sicha in Chelek Lamed Hei where the Rebbe talks about the idea that Milah has two components. There's two components really in the bris of Milah, One between Hashem and us, and one between Hashem and Avraham, or whatever. I don't remember the exact details, but anyway, the point is, one of them is something. One between us and Hashem, and the other between Hashem and us. I think that's what it is. The one between Hashem and us, a human being, doesn't have the ability to undo. So therefore, we're saying even he does mushrooms, he appears like an oral. Nevertheless, he has no ability to undo that part of the bris that Hashem made with us. Okay, so the Gemara says, so if you're saying that, it means midrabanon or dekarila, my karila. Whoever brought this braisa to ask, what was he even thinking? Didn't he realize that it could very well be that deraisa, it's fine, and dirabanon he needs another milah? So why was he even bringing the question? The answer is, after all, the expression is tzorich shiyimo, which implies that it's only dirabanon. If it was deraisa, it would say chayiv shiyimo or something like that. The answer is katoy b'sefer. The machshon who brought this braisa misunderstood it on the because of the sefer. The sefer, the braisa continues, Rabbi Yehuda omer lo yimel b'nesh sakana ilay. Rabbi Yehuda continues, you should not do another bris milah because it's dangerous for him. He might cut away too much of the skin, and then he's going to end up being a krus shafa, which we talked about in the Mishnah at the beginning of the parak, that you're going to cut away some part of, you're going to cut away of the tip over there by mistake, and then you're going to make him that he's not allowed to marry a Jewish woman, and he's not allowed to father children. And the braisa continues, Omruloi, the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda, how can you say that you're not allowed to do a second bris milah? Didn't many people do that in the times of Ben Kuziva? And afterwards they had sons and daughters. So Ben Kuziva is better known in history as Bar Kochba. So what happened was, in his times, you had the Goyim had made, the Romans had made a gzera against bris milah. So, in fact, Rashi says that they forced many Jews to undergo this Mashiach. So now, when Ben Kuziva was in power, he temporarily overpowered the Romans and was ruling there in Beitar for a couple of years. So during his times, these Jews who had been forced by the Goyim to undergo Mashiach did another bris milah to remove that hanging down skin. And afterwards, those people, they were able to father children. So you see that there's no concern of making them a kurus shafcha by doing that. So how can you, Rabbi Yehuda, say that you shouldn't do it? And the Chachamim continue, Shenemar. After all, the Pasuk says, himo yimo. The Pasuk says, circumcise, he should circumcise. And the double expression means, afilo mea pamim, means even if you have to do it 100 times. So even if it was stretched out, and you do it again, he's stretched out, you do it again, etc. And you have another pasuk that says es brisi hefar. The pasuk describes a person who doesn't have a bris milah, and it says he's disobeyed my covenant. And those words are the rabbis is a moshuf. That comes to include a moshuf, implying that he needs to have a bris milah again. So the machshon had misunderstood, as the Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, since the braisa is bringing a pasuk that implied that the whole thing is daraisa. So the Gemara interjects and says, first of all, my va'omer, why do we need two psukim for the Chachamim to prove their point? So because for chitema, hi himo yimo, because you could argue that the words himo yimo are not, that the words himo yimo are not telling you that you have to do a bris milah over and over again when a proper bris milah was done the first time, but rather l'rabas sits in a ma'akvin as a milah. It might include if there are shreds of skin that are ma'ak of the milah. We talked about yesterday that conceivably you could have the moyel does the bris the first time and he leaves part of the atara covered with skin. So we said either that he leaves the most of the circumference of it covered with skin, that he doesn't take the orla off completely, or we said there could be at a particular point of it that most of the height of it is covered, that he leaves over a shred of skin there. And we said yesterday you have to do the bris milah over again and fix that. You have to fix that up. You have to remove those shreds. So you could say himo yimo comes to include that. So that's not a proof about the moshuch. So therefore, Toshmas, Brisi Hefer, the Rabbis, the Moshuch, therefore the Chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda bring the second pasuk that as Brisi Hefer refers to a Moshuch. So now getting back to, again, so we said Rav Huna had said that Daraisa of Moshuch is considered Gemalot, and only Dirabanan do we have a problem. The Makshin asked on him from a Braisa that says Moshuch Tzaruch Shiyimo. So we're saying, what was the Makshin thinking? Didn't he realize that means Dirabanan? So now the answer is, who sober? The Makshin thought, since the Gemara, really the word is supposed to be Talmud over here, the censor is for whatever reason didn't like the word Talmud, so in some places they replaced it with Shas. Anyway, so since the Talmud, since the Braisa had used a pasuk for it. So therefore, the Makshin thought daraisi, that the Chachamim are saying that this requirement of the guy to set to get a second bris is actually daraisi. But that's not so. Midirabbanan across Machta Balma. It's only Dirabbanan. The pasuk is not really teaching us the actual din. It's only an asmachta, which though we've learned a number of times in an explanation that the Ritva says in Rosh Hashanah. When we say something that is an asmachta, we don't just mean that the Chachamim are like playing around with the words over there. What it means is Hashem put those words in the Torah. Hashem decided, for whatever reason, he doesn't want to make this din daraisa, but he put those words in the Torah for the Chachamim to find it and use it as a basis for their takana, should they decide that it's a good idea to make such a takana. So in this case, we're saying the Chachamim eventually made a takana that a moshul should have a second bris milah, according to the Chachamim. And where did they get there? They used this pasuk as support for that, because Hashem, to begin with, put that pasuk in to be available for that purpose. But not that it's actually daraisa. Okay. So the Gemara says Maisi, though. I have a contradiction against Rav Huna. A braisa says, tumtum ein oichel b'truma. A tumtum, which we've talked about before, means a person whose genitals are covered up with skin or something, so you can't tell whether he's a male or a female. Ein oichel b'truma. He himself cannot eat truma, because a tumtum might be a boy, might be a girl. If it's a man, if it's a man, then he's an oral, because since it's covered, obviously they haven't done a bris milah. And we said an oral can't eat truma. On the other hand, the braisa continues, nosha va'avodav oichlin, but his women and his slaves can eat truma. We'll discuss further down what we mean by nosha. It can mean his wives or it can mean his women. We'll get to that soon. On the face of it, if he's a suffolk nekeva, how could we say that his wife can eat truma? If he's a female, then he doesn't have a wife. So we'll get to that. We'll get back to that point soon. Anyway, the braisa continues, moshuch. On the other hand, moshuch, as we just said, somebody whose skin was stretched out, v'noled k'shul mohol, or a baby that was born already gemalit, he's born without an orla, harei elo oichlim, then they are allowed to eat truma. Continues the braisa, androgynous oichel b'truma. Now, an androgynous, which is somebody who has the genitals of both. He has male organs and female organs. It's a very rare thing, but it happens. Anyway, so such a person, oichel b'truma, so if they did a bris milah on the male part, then sure, he's allowed to eat truma. The fact that he has a female part is neither here nor there. The ein oichel b'kodshim, but he can't eat kodshim, because we're talking about the kind of kodshim, the kind that can only be eaten by men. Well, he's suffolk. We're going to talk about later in the perek. We're talking about towards the end of the perek, whether he's a suffolk zocher, suffolk nekeva, or another way of looking at it is neither zocher nor nekeva, but rather a berry of fnatsmi. He's almost like a third gender. Anyway, only males are allowed to eat kodshim. So therefore, he can't. And the braisa continues, tumtum ene eichel lebetrum of lebetkodshim. Now, a tumtum is not allowed to eat. Is not allowed to eat truma or kodshim. Now, we already said a tumtum can't eat truma, so we'll discuss soon why it repeats it again in the braisa. But again, the reason is because he might be a male underneath the covering over there, and if so, then he's an oral. Anyway, the point is, katoni mias moshuch v'nolad truma holarei l'oichlin. Now, the bottom line is, we're saying that a moshuch is able to eat truma. And also that a baby who was born gemalot is allowed to eat truma. So tiyukta de Rav Huna. So wouldn't that be a stira to Rav Huna? Now, how is it a stira to him? Rashi says because Rashi has two explanations. First of all, the first explanation is Rav Huna is saying, after all, that midrabbanan he has to have a bris milah. But our braisa that we just quoted is not saying anything like that. It just says oichel b'truma, implying that even midrabbanan he's allowed to eat truma. So therefore, that would contradict Rav Huna. So fine, Rav Huna had made two statements. Daraisa, he's fine, but implying that, but he says, midivreim gozru olav, so he'd be slogging up that. It seems that even midivreim, we're not gozru on him, he's allowed to eat truma. Then Rashi brings a second girsa in the Gemara. The word is not mesvi, just the opposite. The Gemara is bringing lema messiah. Can we say that this braisa supports Rav Huna? Because when we say that oichlin, when we're saying that the moshuch can eat truma, we mean on a daraisa level. So just the opposite. So that would mean that we've supported Rav Huna. So the girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara is tiyuvta de Rav Huna tiyuvta, meaning we've shlugged him up. But the girsa that Rashi brings is that in fact, Tosfos also brings this Gersa, Lema Messiah, can we say that this Braisa supports him, showing that Daraisa, he is in fact allowed to eat Truma, and we'd be saying, okay, the Braisa is not addressing how it is Darabanan. As a matter of fact, the Rambam Paskins, like Rav Huna, that Daraisa, he's allowed to eat Truma, and only Darabanan is he prevented from eating Truma. So therefore, the Rambam also had the Gersa that was saying, Lema Messiah, like, can we say that it supports him, and not that we end off with Tuvta, but rather that we end off, okay, it doesn't maybe fully support him, but it doesn't slog him up either.
That means also, since they're together, that this person who's born with the bris would have to give a little custom.
Ah, so one second. So we're not even talking, we haven't even talked about Hatofas Dam Bris. So yes, there is, in fact, we're going to talk about in a bit, that there is the concept of Hatofas Dam Bris, that sometimes you have to take a drop of blood. Right now, we're not even dealing with that yet. Right now, we're saying, at least on a Daraisa level, he's not an Oro because he was born without a bris, or in this case, because he had a bris and then he was Moshuch, and he's allowed to eat Truma. Darabanan was saying that the Braisa is not addressing. What you need to do, Darabanan, whether you need to do a second bris or whether you need to do a toughest down bris, that we'll deal with later. Tosfos actually learns, in fact, learns differently, learns a little bit differently. What the Gemara is saying is, the Braisa seems to be saying we're pretty much the same as Rashi, actually, that since we're saying Ochlin Betruma, then that would mean that even Darabanan is not required to have a second bris. So again, that's according to the first Gersa, which is the Gersa that we have in front of us in the Gemara, that we're using it as a Kasha on Rav Huna. According to the second version, we're understanding differently, according to the second Gersa, and we're saying, in fact, it's a proof for Rav Huna. Okay. So now let's analyze that braisa. The word tiyufta means an upschlag, means that we've slugged him up and that's it. The halacha would not be like it. But again, Rashi and Tosfos both bring a girsa, and it seems the Rambam had this girsa as well, that on the contrary, the Gemara has not brought this as a challenge against Rav Huna, but as an attempted proof for him, that we're saying, the braisa is saying that a moshe can eat truma, meaning that at least on a daraisa level, he's not able to, where he's able to. We would say that dirabonon, okay, the braisa is not telling us what the din is dirabonon. No, the word tiyuvta always means an upshlag, but the point is, according to that girsa, we're not saying tiyuvta over here, but rather we're saying lema messiah lay, and we're saying, no, it's not a solid proof for him, but nevertheless, we haven't shlugged him up either. Okay, now let's analyze the braisa. Omamar, tumtum ene eichel betruma. We said a tumtum is not allowed to eat truma, but noshav avodim eichlim, but his wives, on the face of it, noshav means his wives, and his avodim are allowed to eat truma. The question is, noshav v'tumtum enoch. How does a tumtum come to have wives in the first place? Ilema de Kaddish, you're going to say because he's Makaddisher, Titania, and in fact, we learn in a Braisa, Tumtum Shakiddish Kiddush of Kiddushin, that if a Tumtum is Makaddish a woman, if he gives her a Pruta and says, Hareat Makudeshes, then the Kiddushin is valid. And if she wants to marry somebody else, she's going to need a get. Niskaddish Kiddush of Kiddushin, and vice versa, if somebody else gives him Kiddushin and says, Hareat Makudeshesly, then he's also, because we don't know, it's a Suffolk, man or woman. But that's the point. You know, we can say that that's lachumra because we don't know whether he's a man or a woman. So therefore, to be on the safe side, his kiddushin would be valid, or kiddushin with him would be valid. No, that's the point. In other words, we're saying since he's a suffix zacher, suffix mekeva, if he's a man, then he can be mekadosh a woman. If he's really a woman, then he can be niskadish by a man. Another man can go over to him, give him a pruta, and say, Arat Makudeshes. So fine, we can say the chumra, then we consider that the such kedushin either way are valid, and therefore we need to get misafik. But lakula miyamrinan, how could we say lakula? After all, suffik isha, who after all is a suffik of a woman. The in isha makadesh is isha. One woman can't be makadesh another, so how could you say his wives could eat truma? What if he's really a female, and then there's no marriage over here? So the answer is, Amar Abaya, kisha beitzim nikoris mimachutz. The answer is, Abaya says, because you can have, that his beitzim are recognizable on the outside. The covering that makes a person a tumtum doesn't always cover the entire area. Sometimes it only covers the aver itself, the gid, and it leaves the beitzim uncovered. Or I guess you could also have where it covers them as well, but you can still feel them underneath it. So then in that case, so we know that he's a man. Well, in that case, then when he's Makadosh a woman, then we know that it's Kiddush Ivada. So Tosfos points out, by the way, the fact is also, I mean, doesn't he have to be Roy Lachopa? He has to be capable later of having relations with her. If he's covered, obviously he's not going to be able to do that. But the answer is that Roy Lachroya, in principle, we could tear that membrane open and find the actual gib over there. So therefore, the fact that that conceivably could be done, even though we haven't done it yet, makes him that he's able to do valid chuppah b'kiddushin. Anyway, so in that case, we'd be saying that his wife can eat truma, says Abaye. But you're right, if the whole area was covered and we have no way of knowing until it's torn open, zocher, cut open, zocher in the cave, then you're right, his wife wouldn't be able to eat truma, because what if she's not really his wife? Rava says a different explanation. My noshav imai, the word noshav in the Braisa doesn't mean his wives. It means his women, as in the women in his family, namely, specifically, his mother. So if his mother was a Bas Yisrael married to a Kohen, and as we learned in the previous parak, as long as her husband is alive, or as long as she has descendants from him, then she's able to eat truma. So if this Bas Yisrael was married to a Kohen, and then her husband died, and the only child she has is this tumtum, she's allowed to eat truma. I says imay pshita. Well, then isn't that obvious? What's the chiddush? And the answer is ma'udatema moled machil she'en moled enim machil. You might have thought that maybe only somebody who's capable of having children is able to be machil. Only then is his mother able to eat truma on his behalf, because after all, the pasuk says "Yilid Beisai," somebody who was born in his household. We could have thought that "Yilid Beisai" means not only that he's born, but also that he's roi lahoilid, that he's capable of having children in the future, and therefore a tumtum would be excluded. Because in fact, even if they do cut open that membrane and find that he's a zocher in the keva, as the case may be, generally speaking, Tosfos pointed out earlier when we talked about, we said Avraham was a tumtum, that generally speaking, such people still are not going to be able to have children. Even though they obviously, whatever it is that went wrong in their development in the womb that caused them to be a tumtum in the first place, makes it that, Tosfos brings from later on in our perek, tumtum chenikra ein molid, even if they do cut it open and find that he's a zacher, he's still not b'derech hateva going to be able to have children, which is why I was saying it was such a big thing that Avraham was such a mess, that he was a tumtum to begin with, and nevertheless, he still later on fathered children. That's what we said before in Daf Samach Dali, we said Avraham been a tumtum. Anyway, we said that both Avraham and Sarah were tumtumim actually. So the operation was done. They were able to uncover the respective organs, but nevertheless, normally tumtum and molid, the fact that eventually they had children was b'derech nes. Anyway, so the point is that, you would have thought that maybe a tumtum, given that right now he's not molid at all, because the relevant area is covered, and even in the future, if they do cut it open, he's not going to be able to be murdered. So maybe he's not able to allow his mother to eat truma. Kamash Malan, and therefore the Brice has to tell us that he is. Okay. The Gemara says Toshma. Now let's continue. Let's look at the continuation of the Brice and see whether it fits better according to Abaye or according to Rava. Toshma, tumtumena ochel lebe truma lebe kodshim. The Brice finishes off that a tumtum is not allowed to eat truma or kodshim. Now, b'shleim ala abaya, I can understand it for now. The ratio of the braisa, but he said tumtum ain't from a truma. So why is it repeating itself? So according to abaya, we understand tana resha oral vaday v'katani seifa suffik oral. First, we're talking about where he's an oral vaday, namely where the beitzim are uncovered, but the gid is covered. So we know he's a man. We know he has to have a bris milah, but it's covered up, and we're not able to do it. And the sefer is talking about a different kind of tumtum where the entire area is covered, and you don't even know whether he's a zocher or a kei. So that would be why it's repeating it. El l'rava, but according to Rava, that he's not making that distinction. Tumtum the sefer lamali. Why does it even have to mention a tumtum at the end? It's repeating itself. And the answer is my tumtum oral. The answer is, Rava would say that the tumtum in the Sefer doesn't mean a regular tumtum, it means an oral. When you think about it, the basic meaning of the word tumtum comes from like the tamtum esaleim, tamtum alev amoyach. It means sealed up, it means covered over. So therefore, an oral, his gid is covered with an orla. Therefore, in a looser sense, we can call him a tumtum. So the Gemara says, in that case, then you don't need the Braisa to tell us. Hash the suffic oral like ochel, vade oral ochel. If even a suffic oral, a real tumtum, is not able to eat truma because he might be a man, how much more so a vade oral? Why would the Braisa need to tell us that? And the answer is, according to Rava, you have to understand the Braisa, ma tam kama. The Braisa is not telling us two different dinim. It's telling us a reason. Ma tam tumtum eina eicha b'truma. Why indeed can't a tumtum eat truma? After all, he might be a woman, and then there's no issue of arevus with her. The reason is mish mipnei sofik oral. Who the reason is? Because it's a sofik oral, but oral and eicha b'truma of lebekodshin. And you should know that an oral is not allowed to eat truma and kodshin. So therefore, so that would be why the Braisa is repeating it. Not that it's repeating, but it's giving a reason for the din that it mentions in the Reisha. But in fact, Rava could say that the word tumtum in the Sefer doesn't mean an actual tumtum. It means an oral. And then it's saying that because he's an oral, because he's a suffix oral, therefore. Okay. Now, getting back to, we said that Rav Huna had said that Midaraisa, a moshuch, is considered gemalot and can eat truma, and it's only and could eat truma. It's only the Rabbanon was saying that not. So the Gemara says, Lema Ketanoi. Should we say that this statement of Rav Huna, whether he has to do bris milah again, d'oraisa, or only d'rabbanon, is actually machlok b'stanoi, where a braisa says, moshuch, v'noilad k'rumohol, a moshuch, or somebody who was born with a milah, v'gersh niskaya k'rumohol, also a person who becomes a ger when he already has a milah. For example, let's say we learned yesterday that you have the Arabs, the Givonim, the Gavnunim, or whatever, who regularly do circumcision as part of their religion. So now, if such a person becomes a ger, he's physically missing an orla already. And the cotton sha'avar zmanai, and a cotton who's overdue, meaning they didn't do the bris milah on the eighth day, it was delayed for whatever reason, ushar kolani molim, and everybody else who needs a milah, and the Gemara interjected, what do we mean by that? Means l'isuyi mishyesh l'shtei orlas, it comes to include somebody who has two orlas, which means Rashi over here explains that it means that there were two layers of skin, one above the other. Instead of one, and normally you only have one orla, in this case, that an extra layer of skin grew above the other one. This braisa is also brought in Shabbos. Rashi there gives a second explanation that it means that he has two giddim. He has two evarim. It happens. You have those situations where you start having twins develop in the womb and they end up being joined together like Siamese twins or whatever. And you have there can be the point where one of them develops into a full baby and the other one you only have like a vestige of it. And you can have that vestige can be such a thing. Anyway, so all of those things ain't any more than elabayoy. All of those cases you can only do the bris milah during the day. In general, bris milah can only be done during the day because it's bayoy. But we're saying, even in these cases, even when it's not a matter of doing milah, but only a tofes dam bris, or in the case of the shtei orlus, okay, we're saying you have to do a milah of both of them, but the fact is only one of them is really required, al pi Torah. So nevertheless, they still have to be done by day. And the braisa continues, Rabbi Elazar bar Shimon Omer, bizmanoi ein nemoilin el bayoyim, when the milah is being done in the proper time on the eighth day, then it can be only by day because there's a bayoyim hashmini, shaloi bizmani, nemoilin bayoyim of alayla. But if it's being done outside of the proper time, as is true in all of these cases, then they can be done by day and by night. Now, so my lab b'hokam iftibi, isn't that the pashtos what the machlokas is about then? So now we said one of the ones on the list over here was the moshuch. So now, in other words, the Tanakama is saying that the moshuch needs his second bris milah or his atofas dam bris, whatever, by day. And Rabbi Elazar bar Shimon is saying since it's not bismana by definition, then therefore it could be by day or by night. So my lab b'hokam iftibi, isn't that the underlying machlokas? The marsova moshuch daraisa or marsova moshuch darabonon. So the Tanakama would be holding that's daraisa. Therefore, like any bris daraisa, it has to be done by day. And Rav Elazar ben Shimon, who allows it by night, would be saying it's only derabanan. The Gemara says, "V'tisbara, how could you think that? After all, in the list we have cotton sha'ovas mana. We had a baby whose bris was delayed. Mi ikalamanda amad derabanan. Do you think anybody holds that that's only derabanan? Fine. The other cases that we said, you could argue maybe they're only required to do a second milah or a tofas dam bris derabanan. But certainly a baby whose bris was delayed, whether because for example he was born bein hashmoshes, whether because he was sick, etc., etc. So certainly there's no question that his bris is daraisa. So no." No, what we can say is everybody holds that the fact that a moshuch needs a new bris is derabanan. The cotton shav is mana daraisa. On the other hand, when you have a baby who didn't have a bris milah on the eighth day, there's no question of daraisa. So why are we mixing together cases derabanan and daraisa and saying that's the Tanakama saying all of them have to be by day and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon saying they can be by night. So v'hocha v'hokam rifti. The argument is as follows: Marsava darshinin uveyoyim, or Marsava loy darshinin uveyoyim.
But the fact is, when the Pasuk says, Uvayoyim, really, the Pasuk says at the beginning of Parashat Sazria, Uvayoyim Hashmini Yimo Basaro Losoi. Now it could have said Bayoyim Hashmini, it didn't have to say the Vav. So the Vav would be including Mila Shaloi Bismana, that it still has to be Bayoyim, that it still has to be by day. So therefore, so the Tanakhama would be saying that we douse in that Vav, and therefore we say all Bris Milas, regardless whether they're Bismana or not, have to be done by day. And then Rashi says, as far as the Moshuf, now we established before that the fact that a Moshuf needs a second Bris is only Dirabbanan, but we have a concept that the Gemara mentions in many places called the Tokun Rabbanon Ke'inda Raisa Tokun. Whenever the Chachamim make a Takona, they usually make it as similar as possible to the parallel Din Daraisa. So therefore, if Daraisa, you have, for example, that a baby's delayed bris has to be done by day, according to the Tanakhama, then the Chachamim would say the same thing as far as a Moshuf. And then on the other hand, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon doesn't doubt in the Vav of Uvayoyim. So therefore, he would say that even a baby whose bris was delayed, even though the bris is definitely Daraisa, he would say it could be done by day. All the more so Moshuf, which is only Dirabbanan in the first place. So therefore, but they would both agree with the underlying idea that the Moshuf needs a bris only Dirabbanan, which would mean that they both agree with what Rav Huna said before. So again, this is where we have on Amar Aleph, we had different Girsois in the Gemara. Did we slog up Rav Huna? Or did we support what he says? Rashi says over there, he was from our Gemara, from this part of the Gemara, is a proof that we haven't slugged them up. Otherwise, why would we be trying to say that both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon hold like it? And like I said, that is the accepted halacha that a moshuch on a daraisa level does not need another bris milah. Only Dirabbanan does he, and therefore midaraisa he would have been able to eat truma. So the Gemara says, now this point that we're saying about daushening the vav, about daushening the vav of Uvayoyim, ki hod the Yosef Rabbi Yechanan the Kadarish, we can illustrate that by talking about the case where Rabbi Yechanan one time was sitting and daushening. Noisa bismanay in an isrik el Uvayoyim. Now noisa, when you have meat left over from a korban, so we know it has to be burnt. So when it's bismanay, when it's on the day that came noisa, then it can be burnt only by day. But if it's shaloi bismana, if you delayed burning it, then you're allowed to do it either by day or by night. And so, for example, the Korban Pesach, let's say you have a special thing that says in Pesachim, you can't burn it on Yom Tov, you can't burn in general, you can't burn noisa on Yom Tov, so then you have to delay it until the 16th of Nisan. It becomes noisa at Chatzos on the night of the night after the 14th, but you have to wait a day and a little bit before you can burn it. But most other korbanos, the point is that so let's say a shlomim, for example, you have until shkia to eat it, and then afterwards, the next morning is bismano, you have to burn it. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, so you let's say brought a korban shlomim, you brought it on Sunday, let's say you have Sunday and Monday, you have Sunday night and Monday until shkia to eat it. You didn't, it becomes noiser. So now it's bismano, so therefore you can't burn it Monday night, you have to wait till Tuesday morning. But if, let's say, you didn't burn it Tuesday morning, Rabbi Yechanan is saying that you could burn it Tuesday night or Wednesday night or whatever. Once it's shaloi bismano, then you're allowed to
burn it at night.
But the eistrei Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yechanan, now Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Yechanan, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, we know from the pasuk that a bris has to be done by day when it's on the eighth day, because it says, so we would only know from the pasuk that if it was on the eighth day. How do we know that it also includes when it's the ninth or tenth or eleventh or twelfth? Which a Mishnah and Shabbos tells us. You have, for example, a baby is born of Friday going into Shabbos. Then you, if it's born Ben Ashmoshes of any day, really, then you can't do the bris. Let's say it's born Ben Ashmoshes of Monday going into Tuesday. You can't do the bris mila on Monday. It might not be full 8 days yet. So therefore, you have to delay it to Tuesday, which is potentially the ninth day since it was born. And if that Ben Ashmoshes was Friday night, then you have to delay it till Sunday, which is the 10th day, and so on and so forth. The Mishnah tells us various cases over there involving Yom Tovim, where you may have to delay it by as much as 4 days. Anyway, how do we know, says Rabbi Elazar, brings us Braisa, that all of those minayin, that those also have to be done by day. Tamad loyma uvayoyim. Therefore, the pasuk says uvayoyim, and he continues va'afilu laman de ledorish vav vehei dorish. And even an opinion such as Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, we said before, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon does not darshan a vav from uvayoyim. So you would say, according to him, in fact, you are allowed to do such bris milas by night. But definitely, he agrees that you darshan a vav and a hey. namely by noiser, which was what Rabbi Yechon was talking about. The pasuk is veha noiser mimenu ad burka ba'ish yisraifu. So even Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon would have to agree that the vav and the hey you do daushen, and therefore it means davka by day, whether it's bismanoi or whether it's shaloi bismanoi. So therefore, how can you, Rabbi Yechon, be saying that if it's shaloi bismanoi, then you're allowed to burn it by night? And the Gemara says ishtik. Rabbi Yechon was quiet, which either means that he didn't have an answer, or it means he didn't think that it's worthy of an answer.
Or he was
so it could mean any of the above, right? Busted in nothing. Well, so after Rabbi Elazar left, Amalei Rabbi Yechonon, Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yechonon says to Rish Lakish critically about Rabbi Elazar, Ra'isi leben pedos sheyoshi bederish k'moshi m'piyak bura. I saw Ben Pedos, which is Rabbi Elazar, Stam the Amorah Rabbi Elazar in Chas is Rabbi Elazar ben Pedos. So now Rabbi Yechonon is speaking about him. He's his Talmud, and he's speaking about him in a critical way, and that's why he's calling him Ben Pedos, like when the Jewish people were critical of Moshe Rabbeinu, when they called him Ben Amram. So I saw Ben Pedos sitting and teaching these psukim Moshe Mepiagura, like Moshe did when he's speaking in the name of Hashem. In other words, he's speaking as if he was a Tana, but he's an Amora. What's he doing? A factual statement like that? That's not the way Amoraim are supposed to work. It's supposed to be Rabbi Yechonon saying that you bring the Braisa and then you start analyzing it. Not that you say a factual statement like that. Everybody would agree a Darsh and a Vav and a Hey. So what's he doing? Slugging me up like that? So Amalei Rish Lakish Didehi. So Rish Lakish tells Rabbi Yechonon, do you think it's his own idea? There's about the Vav and the Hey, Masnisi. It's actually a Braisa. So then he has every right to be quoting that Braisa to you. So Rabbi Yechonon asks, Hey Chatonilei, where is there such a Braisa? He tells him, Betoras Koinim. In Toras Koinim, which is the Sifra, the Medrash Halacha and Sefer Vayikra. You have a series of Medrash Halacha that, like this, we have throughout Shas, we have the Gemara will bring, Tonon Abanon. It says such an apostle. And from it, we douse in a certain din. Many of those come from this series of Svarim. You have Mechilta on Shmois. You have Sifra on Vayikra, which is also called Toras Koinim. And you have Sifri on Bamidbar and Dvarim. So they go through systematically each pasuk and tell us what dinim we learn from the words and from the expressions in that pasuk. So now, so Rabbi Shlosh Lakish tells Rabbi Yechonon, when Rabbi Elazar told you that everybody agrees that you darshan a vav and a hey, then he's getting that from Toras Koinim. So Rabbi Yechonon apparently was not familiar with Toras Koinim yet. In fact, the Rambam tells us in his Akdama to Yad HaChazaka, where tonight we have the Siyum Rambam, Shlosh Prakim, and tomorrow we start it over again. So he describes over there the evolution of the Svarim that eventually came to have Toras Shabal Peh in them, the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Midrashim, or whatever. So he says Toras Koinim was actually written down or composed, whatever, by Rav. Rav is in the same generation as Rabbi Yechonon. So therefore, in Rabbi Yechonon's times, it wasn't really well known yet. It was new. So therefore, Nothak Tanya, now, I mean, the content in it is old. The content of it is from Tanoim. But Rav is the one who arranged it into the form that we have it now. So when Rabbi Yechonon found that out, Nothak Tanya B'tlosa Yomi, so he went and spent 3 days learning Toras Koinim, B'sabra B'tlosa Yomi, and then he spent the next 3 months delving into it and understanding it on a deeper level. So that this way, now we'd be familiar with it for the future. Now that he knows this important medrash that we need to be aware of, that teaches us many important things in halacha, that he made sure to learn it thoroughly. Anyway, the point is that this little story over here illustrates the idea that we see that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon does say that you don't darshan a vav. He says you will darshan a vav and hey, but not just a vav by itself. Therefore, he doesn't have to douse in the vav of uvayei mashmini to say that all brisim have to be done by day. He can say only when it's mashmini, only when it's on the eighth day. But otherwise, if it's delayed, then you could, in fact, do it by night. Okay. New topic. Amar Rav Elazar, oral shehiza has a osik sheva. If an oral, so we said that an oral is not allowed to eat truma or kodjin, but if he sprinkles somebody with parah aduma water, then has a osik shera, then that hazah is valid, and the person that he sprinkled on becomes tarper, or the object, the keli that he sprinkled on becomes tarper. Yesterday we said that an oral is makabel hazah, that he's able to receive hazah, because we said when the Jewish people entered out Israel, we said there was still arelim, and yet they sprinkled them with parah aduma water in preparation for bringing the first korban pesach in out Israel. We talked about that yesterday in the Gemara. So now we're saying not only is such a person able to receive hazah, he's also able to give it. And Rabbi Elazar says midi dehavei atzvu yoyim, because he's no different in that regard than a tzvu yoyim. Tavuyim is not allowed to eat truma, as we're going to talk about later on in the sugya, but he is still allowed to, he is allowed to be involved in preparing the paradruma. In fact, not only is he allowed to, but we learn from Sukkim that he's allowed to, and in fact, during the time of the second Mishmikdash, because of the Tzedukim, where they claim that it's not so, the Chachamim would deliberately make the Kohen who was preparing the paradruma, they would deliberately be metameh him and then make him a Tvoya, and we talk about this in Yuma and in various other places, that in order to demonstrate that the Tzedukim are wrong. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar says, the same way as a Tavul Yom is able to, a Tavul Yom can't eat Truma, but he's kosher to prepare the Paradruma. So the same way an Orol is the same thing. Just the fact that he's prevented from eating Truma doesn't prevent him from doing the Paradruma. The Gemara says, how do you compare Mal Tavul Yom to Kenmutu B'Maisa? After all, a Tavul Yom is allowed to eat Maisa Sheni, where an Orol is not. So maybe the fact that there's a chumrah on him that he can't eat maaser sheni would also be a chumrah on him, therefore that he can't have to do with the paradruma, even to sprinkle it. The Gemara says, so what? We're not talking about eating over here. You're not eating the paradruma. We're talking about touching. And therefore, the point would be, now a tvul yom is not allowed to touch truma because he's going to make a truma. He's considered a sheni of the truma. He's going to make the truma a shlishi of the truma mutar b'para, and yet he's allowed to prepare the paradruma. Oral shemutar b'negia. So we're making a kavachomer, and oral is allowed to touch ma'isa sheni, and he's even allowed to touch truma. Ain a din shemutar b'para. How much more so? An oral is allowed to touch truma. Ain a din shemutar b'para. How much more so that he's allowed to touch the paradruma water and sprinkle it? Maushah points out over here, by the way, that how do we know that an oral is allowed to touch truma? And he says, since we learned before that we had a whole limud over there appointed of Eliezer versus appointed of Akiva, how we know that an oral is not allowed to eat truma, that itself implies that he's not allowed to touch it. Otherwise, the pasuk could have told us he can't touch it, and we would understand he can't eat it. So Tanya Nami Hochi, we learned similarly in the Braisa. Oral shehiza has a osik shera. If an oral sprinkles paradruma water, the hazah is kosher. In fact, it actually once happened that there was an oral who sprinkled paradruma water and the chacham said it's kosher. To sprinkle paradruma water, no, you do not have to be a kohen. The pasuk just says, so no, you don't have to be a kohen to sprinkle it. So the Gemara says, Maisi, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Tumtum Chikidish, Kidushay Pasol. If a Tumtum is Makadish, now the process of making paraduma, of making paraduma water is that you burn the paraduma, you take the ashes and you mix them with water. You have a nosin of Mayim Chaim Akeli. To be exact, what you do is you put the water in the keli first and then you sprinkle the ashes on top of the water. And as soon as they touch the water, it becomes part of Aduma water. And that process, doing that, putting the ashes in the water, is called Kiddush. It's called Kiddush Mechatas. So we're saying that if Oral does that, then the Kiddush is possible. Mepneshu is Suffolk Oral, because after all, as we said before, Tumtum might be a man, might be a woman. So therefore, if it's a man, then he's a Suffolk of, then he's an Oral. So therefore, he's a Suffolk of Oral for Oral possible the Kaddish. And Oral is possible to do the Kiddush. And the androgynous Kiddush Kiddushay Kosher, on the other hand, an androgynous, where we said he has the genitals of both sexes, then if he does the Kiddush, then it's Kiddushay Kosher, then it's kosher because both a man and a woman are allowed to do the Kiddush. As far as the sprinkling has to be done by a man, but the Kiddush, the Chachamim learn, can be done, the mixing, the ashes in the water, according to the Chachamim, can be done by a woman as well. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm af androgynous Kiddush Kiddushay Psulin. Rabbi Yehuda says that also an androgynous who does the Kiddush, it's also possible, Mepnesha Suffolk Isha, because after all, an androgynous is Suffolk a woman, but Isha Psulam and a Kaddish. Rabbi Yehuda learns, as we're going to be discussing in the Sugya, that a woman is possible to do Kiddush Mechatas. So anyway, Katoni Mia Oro Vesuffolk, Katoni Mia Oro Vesuffolk Oro Psulam and a Kaddish. Now, the bottom line is we're saying that an Oro and a Suffolk Oro are possible to put the ashes into the water. So the pashtus, if they're not allowed to put the ashes in the water, they're not allowed to sprinkle them either. So how could we say before that Oral Shekiddush Kiddushim, that how could we say before that Oral Shehiza has a Osik Shera? And the answer is, Omer of Yosef, Hai Tana, Tana Dvei Rav Akiva hi. The answer is that that second braisa that we just quoted is a braisa from the yeshiva of Rav Akiva, Demar Bilei L'Oral Ketomei, where he says that an oral is considered like a tomei, and since obviously a tomei can't be mekadesh mechatos, we sprinkle them, then neither can he, according to Rav Akiva, then you're right, neither could an oral. The Tanya, as in fact, we learn in a braisa, Rav Akiva, ish ish l'rabas oral. We said before, udiyum in the sugya, we said that how does Rav Akiva know that an oral can't eat truma? We said because it says ish ish mizera arid, and he said the word ish ish comes to exclude an oral. So by the same token, so now what's the point? The Pasuk is talking about over there about Tmeim. Ish ish mizera aron vohut sarua izov, that if he has a tumor of tsaras or ziva or any other kind of tumor, then he can't eat tumor. Rabbi Akiva is saying the word ish ish also includes an oral. So therefore, in effect, Rabbi Akiva is saying that an oral is in the same category as a tumor. Well, then, according to Rabbi Akiva, everybody agreed that Tomei can't prepare paradroma water or sprinkle it. So therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, neither can an oral. The first Braisa, the statement that we said, that Rabbi Lozo says, as also Treira, would be according to the Chachamim, who disagree, in particular, according to Rabbi Eliezer, who learns the oral not eating truma from a different pasuk. So according to him, the oral is not like a Tomei. The Gemara says, Omar Rava, but Rava says, I don't understand. I was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rabbi Yosef, and hearing this statement, but I had a problem with that. If you're telling me that according to Rabbi Akiva, an oral was considered like a tomei, lo lishtemit tana v'lisni ha'oral v'atomei, how could it be that there's not a single place where any tana has never mentioned anything about an oral and a tomei, and we would ever mention them together, and then we could say it's pointed about Akiva. How is it that you're telling me only in this one place you have Rabbi? Yeah, just a minute. How is it only in this one place you haven't mentioned an oral, and we're going to say a new shita of Rabbi Akiva that he considers an oral like a tomei? If so, then all over Shas, whenever it mentions a tomei, there should be at least one other place where it mentions an oral, and we would say that's a coin to Rabbi Akiva. In other words, Rabbi is saying, I don't think that Rabbi Akiva actually holds, just because he learns that an oral can eat truma from the word ish ish in connection with tomei, that doesn't mean that he actually considers an oral to be a tomei. So that doesn't work. So the answer is the lema Rabbi Akiva, that then we would say it's a point to Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, Rabbi says, I don't believe that there is such an opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Just because he learns from ish ish doesn't mean that he says that an oral is like a tomei. The Gemara says, v'lo, you're telling me not. V'hol katoni, ha'oro v'atomei p'turim min ha'riya. I can give you right at the beginning of Chagiga. It says that an oral and a tomei are potter from ri'ya. They're potter from appearing in the Beis Hamikdash on the Shalosh Regalim and bringing an oilas ri'ya. The answer is that's different. Hosim Mishum de Mois, that's different. An oral, we agree, is most, because the fact that he has an oral on him is disgusting, and therefore we don't want him appearing in the Azara. But to go so far as to say that he's considered a Tomei, and therefore that would affect Parah Adumah, which after all doesn't take place in the Beis Hamikdash, that not necessary. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, analyzing the opinions. We said Rabbi Yehuda says that a woman, and therefore also an androgynous, cannot prepare parah adruma water, and the Chachamim say they could. So we're going to deal with tomorrow why indeed they hold that way, and then we'll continue getting back to topics of an oral as far as Maaseh Sheni and so. So the oral would be allowed to walk till the Azara. He has to stop before he gets into the Azara. Okay. Thank you, everyone.